third time saying hello. I don't know what happened. We just like recorded an episode.
We lost it.
Anyways,
hello guys. Welcome back to a new episode of Conversations with Friends. We're very happy to have you back.
Yeah, we hope you guys missed us. And
how are you, Teresa, first of all?
I'm good. I am just cruising. You know, I'm excited for the holidays coming up, the end of the year.
Are you in the Christmas mood?
I kind of am in the mood of like going home and seeing my family and that kind of stuff. But I haven't like really done that many Christmassy things except for drinking white wine. But I haven't really been that like gift shopping. I haven't really like watched any Christmas movies. I haven't really made any Christmas cookies. I feel like I just have so much going on that it's like,
yeah, no, you're so busy as well.
Yeah, which is sad, but that's why I'm looking forward to going home to my family's house because I have a bigger kitchen and I'm just like, oh, maybe it's more Christmassy there, like seeing my family, having like a bigger TV and stuff. And I really want to like watch a Christmas movie. And like, I keep saying to my boyfriend, like, let's watch a Christmas movie tonight. But then we just end up not, or like,
it's like, so I don't know,
like you can't find them on Netflix, or yeah, you're tired, or like you've seen them all, even though I can always rewatch a lot of them. But it's like, I don't know, I just haven't done that many Christmas activities.
Me as well, I'm going to Brazil and it doesn't feel like Christmas at all. Like, it's going to be so weird having like being in 30 degrees and it's like Christmas and everyone's in Germany like, oh, maybe it's going to snow or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nothing to complain about, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining at all.
Not in the Christmas mood. I'm going to Brazil. Like, my life is so hard. No.
But yes, anyways, I'm not in the Christmas mood at all. It's kind of like, I wasn't last year that much, but this year I was like, I've been to the Christmas markets once.
Yeah.
Like once and had mulled wine, but that was it. But it's fine.
Yeah. You
it's
know,
all right.
I mean, we had a like little mulled wine session in our last episode.
Yeah.
Maybe we got you in a little bit of a Christmas mood. Maybe it will come up, you know, maybe in the New Year's mood. Maybe you have to celebrate the end of the year.
I'm so ready for New Year's.
Yeah. I'm actually like, I mean, I hate New Year's Eve. Like, I don't hate it, but like, I'm not the biggest fan of the stress that comes with like, what are you going to do?
But we've kind of got a plan for this
year. Yeah. My plan this year is just not to stress and not to care. Like, if I end up just like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just so much stress that it like ruins the party.
Too much pressure as well.
Yeah. And I'm just like not, and this year I'm just like, whatever, like whatever happens, I'll just got to dress cute. I'm going to be with my friends. So that's all that matters. Going to have some nice food and drinks, and that's fine for me. And like, yeah, I mean, maybe we can do an episode like at the end of the year as well, like reflecting. Like we did last year as well, and just reflecting on what we've learned so far and what we're looking forward to in the new year. So yeah, we don't get into that too much. But
you know what's so crazy, actually, I was on the train yesterday, and so basically, in, you know, like everyone knows the tradition that we have in Brazil, like with the underwear and stuff, like for New Year's, that you have to like buy a new pair of underwear and like each color represents something different. And it was so crazy because I looked it up and I wore like purple underwear last year. Was that purple? Yeah, it was purple. And it was like spirituality for the new year. And actually, that's so true. Like, I've really kind of, I've gone more into my like spiritual side and like discovered it. And I was like, oh, like it actually came true.
Yeah. I can't remember what I was wearing last year, to be honest. I probably should have written it down. Anyways, but yeah, let's just do like another video on like a video, another podcast.
We're
on
like
the
YouTubers.
I mean, actually, shout out to a YouTube channel. Go follow us there. All the episodes will be uploaded.
Awesome.
So you can see us while we chat as well. Obviously, you can do that on Spotify too, but go on YouTube to see the episodes. But yeah, what is your gem of the week, Carol?
Oh, finally, I have one. Like a, I actually thought about it and thought of one. But so basically, I had COVID last week and it was not nice. And it was so annoying. Second time. And like, it wasn't as bad, but it was not pleasant. Like the first day, I was like, I felt gross. Like, so gross. And I was so annoyed because I was like, all my friends are outside. And I'm just like, why did I have to get it? But anyways, I'm healed now, completely fine. And what I rediscovered for myself was whilst the COVID thing, because I was like, I need to get better in 5 days. Like, how am I going to do this? Pumping myself with tea, zinc, like so many things. But what something that really helped me and kind of made the symptoms go away very quickly is the do you know Wim Hof breathing? And I like, because I was like, I had a really bad cough as well. And like my chest was feeling very tight and yeah, it was not nice. So I was doing it in like the bathtub a lot, where like the steam was kind of opening up everything. And I was doing it and I felt so much better, right? Like right after, I think I did it on like the, I started doing it on like the fourth day or something.
Yeah.
And it was so good. And I was like, wow, I've been doing it for a while, but like on and off kind of, and just like, sometimes I just stop. But it was super good. And it really kind of, I felt like my body was, could be, do you know like what happens when you do the Wim Hof breathing? Like I did a little bit of research on it. Yeah, but maybe
explain to the listeners as well. Like if they're
not really
aware. So basically,
the Wim Hof breathing is this very, it's this breathing technique that you have. So basically it starts off that you, like I always do it guided, like on, you can find it on YouTube and he also has an app. And basically, it starts with like 30 very deep breaths. So like you can breathe through your mouth and you breathe in like through the, like, how do you say, belly, chest, and then, very deeply, but then you just let go. You don't exhale fully. Like you just let go. So basically you're like sort of hyperventilating for 30 breaths. So it's like deep and then let go, deep, let go and stuff. And then on the third, like, when you have done the 30 breaths, you breathe in fully and then you just let go and you hold your breath, basically. Like you retain the breath. And it's insane because it has like a, like obviously like the, how do you say, the chemical side of it. It basically, you can hold your breath up to like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Obviously you have to like train your lungs and stuff, but it has something to do with the level of oxygen in your blood. And it's insane. And then after that, that breath hold, like you can hold it as long as you want. And then you breathe in fully again. Like you let go, obviously. Mm. And then you breathe in fully and then you hold your breath for 15 seconds again and then let go. And that was like the first round. And then you do it for 3 or 4 rounds. And it's insane how like immediately your body is like so relaxed.
Mm.
And like you feel like you're basically sort of like you're floating and you're kind of high.
Mm.
And it's really insane. And it's like, there's a lot of evidence and like Wim Hof breathing is super big at the moment.
Yeah. It has been also quite like a while. Like ice bait. Like in general, the whole guy is just very like popular. I feel like.
Yeah. And it's basically like proven that it like boosts your immunity and everything. And because basically it comes down to, it makes your blood alkaline for a while, and that is because when your blood or when your body is very acidic, it can't fight off infections very well, and like it's very prone to viruses and stuff. But when it's alkaline, it can, the pH level in your body, when it's alkaline, it can help, like it can fight off viruses, bacteria and everything. It's super interesting. I had never heard of it before. I think I did it the first time in Australia when like COVID kind of started. And then, yeah, it's super interesting. So that's my gem of the week.
Do you do it on YouTube? Like, do you watch videos?
Yeah, you do. There's like, there's so many videos, but I like to do it with his voice.
Okay.
Because he like guides you, like breathe in, breathe out. And then like it's so insane. Whilst you're holding your breath, it's like you're holding your breath and then you think that you need to breathe, but then this like wave of like calmness just like goes through your whole body and you're like, fuck, like I actually don't have to breathe right now. It's fine. And that happens like maybe 2 or 3 times. And then like you look at the clock and it's like 2.5 minutes and you're like, what the fuck? Like what, how did I just do that? And obviously you can train your lungs to, you can hold it up to 5 minutes or 4 minutes, which is insane.
Yeah.
Cause like I can hold my breath normally for like maybe a minute.
Yeah,
like
max.
Top max. Yeah, like, and I'm like almost dying when I do that. Yeah. But it's so crazy. And also I love the feeling after, you're just like laying there and it's really like, how do you say, just very relaxing and just very calm and nice. And I was doing it like 3 times a day.
Yeah.
And then I think it really helped.
Yeah.
It helped me.
I need to try it.
My immunity.
I heard of it so many times, but I just haven't like really, I always forget to do it. And then I'm just like, you know, you just like.
But I didn't, I also wanted to do the cold shower thing, but I was like, I'm sick. I don't think that's. The thing is like, I've done my research on it as well. Like cold showers are amazing when you're like healthy, completely healthy. But for example, when you're fighting off an infection and your body temperature is already very high and then you stress your body with cold, then it's just too much stress for the body.
Yeah,
it's like already
fighting
off the infection, trying to fight it off. And then just the stress is not good. But I think it's super interesting, like the Wim Hof thing, and the whole thing is just very, just a good tool.
Yeah, well, you said no to Corona.
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 That was like my motto for the whole week. I was like, Corona, no. I'm going to this party on Sunday, bitch.
Wim Hof is saving me. But
what's your jam?
My jam is skincare, like product, or in general, like.
Yeah, your skin's looking so good.
What? I have like pimples all over my face.
No, but it's like looking really nice.
Well, I think the pimples are because I'm getting my periods. It's like hormonal.
Yes.
Again, but well, I'm also drinking my gut thing from the Beauty Chef again. So
the glow thing? I've got it as well.
Yeah, so that thing, but it's not my gem of the
week. I accidentally bought the one for 50 plus for the glow ageless.
You're like, wrinkles are coming into our lives. I didn't know that you made one of those.
Yeah, it's like a new one. And it has like different, like more, like a few more things in there, like hyaluronic acid and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I just have the normal glow one or cleanse. I can't remember glow or cleanse something. But no, that's not my, I mean, I love it, but it's not my gem of the week. My gem of the week is Miranda Kerr's skincare brand, Cora. I got the Noni Glow face oil because I've listened to a few podcasts with her and she really sounded like, I never really like knew anything about her or listened to any podcasts of her, but she's also from Australia.
Yeah.
And she did one, I can't remember what the podcast was called, but she did one about like her like journey of skincare and like her grandma, how she always gave her like Noni and like how she then developed the Noni Glow face oil. And this, I don't really know the whole like benefits, but I like knew it once because she mentioned in the podcast how like Noni is really good prone for like your skin as well. Mm-hmm. And it's you can find it in Australia. I'm not sure if you can find it somewhere in Europe, but that's why she gets all of her like ingredients for her like products, her skincare products in Australia, because they do have a lot of more like exotic, really good, because the nature there is more like plain and like raw and untouched, whereas like in Europe, there's so many buildings and streets and cities. So, but like she just talked about it and she was just like talking about like not just her, but the person who was interviewing her on the podcast also used it, and he's a man, and they were just talking about like the health benefits and like not the health but the benefits for your skin and how it like really gives you the brightness but like also the hydration, and just like it was really good to put it on at night. It's like a self-care practice, and I was like, I don't really put enough time to my skincare. Like I have like a cleansing gel and stuff, but I really want to do something that's like a bit more luxurious that I can do here and there to like support my skin, especially in winter.
You can also like do gua sha with it.
Yeah. Like she also has like peelings and stuff. I might want to like try some other things of her line as well. Like not quite expensive, but like definitely more like on the
higher price,
not like drugstore product skincare, but I was like,
but
maybe
it's good
like,
to invest in skincare.
Yeah, that's what I was
well.
Thinking that maybe for Christmas I can give something to myself and my skin. And I just got the little one as well, and the little one goes a long way. Like you need to use it every single day, and also you don't need much of it. It's an oil, so, and I put it in on the evening before I go to bed, and I really feel like the next day my skin has more of like I look more alive. Like in winter, you know how you like look really dead sometimes.
Yeah, you're like really tan as well right now. Like, is that your
makeup?
I
have bronzer on, but like, I don't.
You did a good bronze job.
Yeah, well, I'm not self tanning or anything. I wanted to go to the solarium with you the other day, but I just haven't been still. I'm still a virgin when it comes to solariums, but it makes me just feel more like I did something for myself, hydrated, brighter, just like glowing, like in the evening and also the next day. Yeah. And it feels like I'm doing something with my skin, because I feel like at the moment, just moisturizer is not enough for my skin, because it's very dry in winter.
Oh my god, my chin yesterday, like, and my whole nose, it was also because I was blowing my nose the whole time. It was so sore, and like the skin was sort of like really cracking and like peeling off, and it was just, it's like so uncomfortable in the winter. But like as well with the like heat, like the heaters, like the dry air, and like it really like takes a toll on your skin. So it's awesome that you have like this ritual.
No, I can really recommend it, the Noni Glow face oil. I think that's what it's called. Cora Kio. K-O-R-A. And yeah, in general, just check out her skincare brand. It really feels like she put a lot of love and effort and time into it. Like actually not just because she wants to have a brand, like she had it for like years and like wrote a book about it. And she really seems like she educated herself since she's a child. I guess also like her upbringing was very like holistic, spiritual. She like grew up in like the nature of Australia. So it seems like she really is passionate about it, and it's not just saying it to sell stuff. So that's what I really liked about it, and I looked more into it and it sounded really cool. So I was like, okay, I'll just try it out, and I really like it so far. And yeah, I can just really recommend.
But it's like awesome because my skin, for example, it hates oil. I've tried so much.
Really?
Like because I love like doing gua sha as well and like just glowing and like nourishing my skin, but it hates oil. It like, it doesn't like it. Yeah. So I just like, I gave up on oil, but I don't need it. Like,
I mean, and my face hates coconut oil as well, for example.
Oh my God. But coconut oil is very, how do you say, clogging, like it clogs your pores. Like, I use coconut oil to remove my my eye makeup, but that's it. Like not on my face.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that's my gem of the week. I'm the skincare girl now.
You are. Yeah. But we have a very special episode today, which is with a guest from Australia. Her name's Edie, and she's a sexologist from Byron.
Yes, he's a sexologist and art therapist. And,
yes.
Basically, we reached out to her to talk about like burning questions to sexologists that everyone kind of like might want to hear when you're in your 20s or even older or younger, or like just in general, like sex is such a big topic. That's such a big part in all of our lives and we don't speak about it enough. And we just invited her on the pod to share some of her knowledge that she gained throughout her years as a sexologist and share that with us. And it was really, really lovely to have her on.
So yes, enjoy. So take any advice that you need for wherever you are. And we hope that you like
enjoy the episode. And yeah, thanks again, Edie, for coming on. And we'll just skip to the conversation now.
Enjoy.
Bye. Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello. Hi, Edie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good to have you. So welcome, everyone. This is Edie. We have a very, very special episode planned today. What are we talking about, Teresa?
Well, basically, we have Edie Bartley on. Also, like, I think your Instagram is with Edie, right? So we had a little bit of chat before, but just a little introduction. Maybe you want to introduce yourself with like one sentence, who you are.
Sure. So I'm Edie. I'm a sexologist and an art therapist, and I'm based in Melbourne. And that's me.
I hope the recording goes well because, like, we're in Berlin right now and you're in Australia. It's daytime for us, it's nighttime for us. So bear with us that everything works out well, but I'm pretty sure it will work out.
So yeah, anyways, we have a, like I said, very special episode planned today. Very interesting as well. So we're talking a little bit about like burning questions to sexologists, questions you have like in your 20s as a woman, as a man, or even as a teenager, or even when you're older. Just questions that will probably come up in your life. We asked on our Instagram, but we also talked to our friends, like what are questions that you would ask a sexologist if you would basically go have a session with you. And my boyfriend actually knows you from like being friends with you from your hometown. And he was like, yeah, you should do an episode with Edie. Like she'd be the perfect match. So we just reached out and we're so excited that you're here today.
It's actually so cute that he did that because, you know, when you're like making content and you're like, you know, putting so much effort and love into what you post and you, deep down you just feel like no one's actually consuming it or like nobody's listening, nobody's watching. And then like to know that Sean was there looking at my things is so cute.
Yeah, he was telling me, he was like, because I think I was talking about like social media detox or something. He was like, oh yeah, my friend Edie, she always posts these really cool posts and stuff. And then I looked at your Instagram and I was like, wow, you seem like the perfect match. And just in general, I love your content. So I was looking at it. everyone check out Edie's profile. She does amazing, amazing posts and just in general, amazing things. And I'm really glad to have you on.
You know, when you told me that we should do an episode with her, I was like, yes, immediately I said yes. Because it's like so, like I'm really interested as well. And I think the questions like are for both of us, but also for like anyone who kind of
is interested in
or like, yeah, or like,
which I think is probably like,
yeah, a lot of people,
89%, I don't know. Yeah. A lot of people I would say. So,
but yes, anyways, let's start with the burning questions.
I mean, maybe you can also just give us a little introduction into like how you got into sexology and art therapy and how you basically, wanted to become who you are today.
Yeah, so I was actually pretty young when I started studying art therapy. I guess I was fresh out of high school. I took a year off. I really didn't know what I wanted to do and I loved art. And I came across this course and I did that for 3 years, and it was a psychotherapy degree. So it was pretty intense, a lot of experiential, a lot of deep diving into my own psyche and my own like trauma. It was pretty intense, like living in a share house, coming home from uni, and all my housemates would be like, oh, how was your day? I had really shitty customers at work. And I'd be like, yeah, I just, you know, grappled with my childhood fears and traumas. And it was really like, yeah, full on 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the degree, you do an undergrad thesis. And I chose to do mine on menstrual shame because I was also on my own personal journey of like becoming aware of my cycle and sort of like educating myself. And I was doing a lot of workshops in Byron with one of my mentors, Rosie, and she was teaching me a lot. And probably like the number one thing that kept coming up was shame. And then in psychotherapy, shame is quite a like hugely studied phenomenon as well. So I thought I would combine the two. And that kind of got me on the track of sexology, because when I was doing my research, I was like, okay, well, this is a huge, huge area and there's shame in menstruation, but that kind of extends to sexuality as a mm-hmm. whole, and especially for like, yeah, women and people who bleed. And yeah, I think it really opened my eyes up and I realized that there was a lot more that I wanted to learn. And then also on top of that, I was pretty shocked that a 3-year psychotherapy degree didn't cover anything to do with gender or sexuality, or any like sex related things. And crazy, I was like, yeah. Okay, so how am I supposed to go out into the world and be a therapist and, you know, not have any training in those areas? So I feel like, yeah, that's kind of what led me to where I am now. And hopefully that changes in like psychology and psychotherapy degrees.
Yeah, it's really cool to know that you like dove deeper into kind of like sex and gender as well, because I think it's I think sex is a thing that a lot of people still have an issue talking about. Like you said, are ashamed of talking about it.
It's something like everyone, like almost everyone, has sex, and it's still like not talked about as openly as it actually should be, because it's so natural. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, there's so much shame around it, and a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about it because there's this like,
and yeah, not everyone has a great friend they can go to. Like I feel like I have great girlfriends that I can go to, but I also think of my like teenagehood where I felt like maybe I didn't have someone that I can talk about. And I think puberty especially is a time where you struggle with a lot of things like menstruation. And if you don't have like a parental figure or friends or someone to go to, because I didn't have like a good sex education in school at all. Like,
same, me too.
I didn't get any education on that. And it's just so sad how
we had like one lesson about even. Like, it's crazy. And it was like so weird as well. Like the teacher was kind of weird about it. And then it just makes you feel weird as well. Like I think if you have a great teacher about it that speaks about it openly and just very freely, then it changes a lot. But if you don't have the education to start with, I think it's like a weird path you're on. So I think, like Teresa said, it's so important to have good friends that you can talk to about those things. Like I love talking to my girlfriends about everything, just like kind of exchanging experiences and stuff. And I think that's very important to have.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, that was also a huge part of why I studied sexology, because obviously it was a huge interest of mine. I did a year of study on the topic of sex. So it got pretty wild, and there was moments where I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And you feel like you've heard everything and you've seen everything, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, I've seen this. And I was like Googling things on my phone, being like, what the fuck is that? Like trying to be like, you know, up to date and trying to be like current and not trying to kind of show my, just like my naivety, because it is a huge, vibrant and colorful world. And there's so many different niche communities and so many different like niche areas in that world. And I feel like just based on my experience and my identity and who I am, I have kind of gone into a very particular area with like my clients and my work.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really something for everyone out there, which is so exciting because, yeah, I feel like the shame issue is just so profound. And that's like obviously why it's not talked about in school and why our sex education is so negligent and so lacking. But even in like tertiary education, like in a psychotherapy degree, it still isn't spoken about because people are still so like shrouded in the stigma of it all. But then when you kind of actually dive into the world of sexology, it's almost like, you know, the shame just kind of drips away and it's really refreshing, like, to see people and hear people in lecture halls talking about things that are so taboo that, like, you would never talk about. And then, like, going home and having family dinner and my mum being like, oh, what are you writing about at the moment, Edie? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I just did an assignment on BDSM and kink.
Like, that's so cool.
Do you want to know about it? So, like, definitely opened my eyes and opened the eyes of my friends and my family because, yeah, if anyone asked me about my day or what I was writing about or what I was researching, I was just really honest with them or, yeah, I just kind of had to overcome a lot of my own shame in the process.
And would you say what... is like what's really interesting to me, like, would you say that your studies changed your sex life or like just how you absolutely. Like obviously how you view sex but like did it change your sex life?
100%. Like, I was just so like, it was so eye-opening and I was so inspired to try new things, and I was also so much more empowered because I, especially like coming from a hetero background of like my sexual experiences and, you know, being able to hear people's stories and read all of this incredible like online evidence that's now emerging, and also just like study topics and like study things so deeply that I didn't even know existed until I started this course. So yeah, I became a lot more open, a lot more open-minded, a lot more free in my sexual expression. And I think just peeling away those layers of shame is like so healing for your sexual identity and your own sex life, because you become so much more free within yourself. So you're more playful and you're more explorative. So yeah.
That's so cool. You're like, I'm a sex expert now.
No, but I think so. I will never claim to be a sex expert.
No, but I think it's also like a lot of what you say is like, I personally think a lot of good sex comes with good communication. So if you're able to like talk about things and open up about things, it then also leads to just feeling more comfortable.
Yeah, and, no, you know? Absolutely. Definitely. Mm, like it's totally. All about, we're all about communication and like talking about what you like and stuff. And that's actually leading us to the questions, actually. So we've got a first question for you, and that is about masturbation. And I would love to know that, like, how often should people, or like, okay, no, how, not how should they, how often should they masturbate, but like, what would you say is a healthy amount of masturbation and what's an unhealthy amount?
I mean, it's definitely not, I feel like it's just not what people think. Like, people probably think, everybody probably has their own idea of what a healthy amount of masturbating is. And, you know, like, I've watched like a documentary on someone who had, like, they call it, like the correct term is hypersexuality or out of control sexual behavior. So that's sort of what refers to like an obsession with masturbation, or like, I guess, an addiction, but that's not the terminology that you would use. But even in like the sort of the clinical world, when looking at like that kind of obsession, it's just so hard to actually determine what is healthy and what is not healthy and when it becomes a problem, like when it crosses that line. Mm-hmm. And so it's really not something that I feel like I can make a general statement, like it's just not a black and white thing. I feel like it really just comes down to the individual and like what feels safe and comfortable for that individual. And if you know, they have a really let's say abundant practice of self-pleasure, and it's getting in the way of their social life. It's getting in the way of their relationship. It's getting in the way of like getting to work and functioning throughout the day. And like if they're hiding it, or if they're lying about it, or if they're embarrassed, or if they have shame around how much they're masturbating, then maybe that's when it would become an issue. But yeah, I really don't think I can say like what's a healthy amount and what's not a healthy amount. Like it's just completely different for everyone. And like there's studies around, you know, a healthy amount of orgasm or ejaculation. Like it's actually quite a vital function in the body. So, you know, they say that you should orgasm often for like vitality and health and strength and that kind of thing. And then also for like fertility, there's studies around like how important it is to have like, especially for penis owners. Can I say penis on the podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I feel like it would be so hard to talk about sex without mentioning. It'd be like, you know, the little thing that men have.
No, you can I say mean, penis. I don't know if you want to say like a euphemism or something. But no, yeah, no, especially, yeah, like when studying fertility, like I was pretty surprised to hear that it is actually, you know, if like, a couple, like a hetero couple, are trying to conceive and they go to a fertility specialist, they might even encourage the man to, you know, masturbate when they're trying to conceive, because it is, it's like a healthy production of sperm, and the sperm isn't just sitting there, you know, like just hanging around. It's getting kind of flushed out and reproduced. So yeah, there's a flow. And I got a bit kind of off topic there, but I think it just comes down to the fact that I really can't, it's not a black and white thing, and I can't really make that call.
Yeah,
it's just up to the individual.
Like, yeah, you can't really say like, oh, you should masturbate these
three times a day.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's kind of also going into the one question, which I heard a lot of my friends saying, or like a general, I think it's like, I don't know if it's a misconception or if it's actually truth. That's why I wanted to ask you as well. It's like using sex toys for masturbation. I remember I got like into masturbation rather late in my life because of the topic of shame. Like I was ashamed of talking about masturbation, so I just didn't do it. I grew up in a religious like town, so I feel like it was never spoken about. So it was like weird to me. But then I got into masturbation. My friends were like encouraging me to get sex toys.
I remember that. I think I remember that day when you were like, she asked us in the group, she was like, hey girls, like I have a question. And then she was like, do you guys masturbate or something? And I was like, what? Like,
It was so foreign to me. I don't know. And then I was like, okay, how do I get started? I want to get like a sex toy. But then I remember one friend of mine saying like, no, don't get a sex toy. Like it's overstimulating you, and then you can't come if you just masturbate without one. And I was wondering if that's actually true, or if that's like a false misconception.
Yeah. So that's also an interesting, it's an interesting question, because there's definitely the argument that says like sex toys, especially vibrators, will desensitize your genitals, like your clit, especially because like the nerve endings on the clitoris are so sensitive. But it's also like, I don't know, it kind of, it comes back to the same thing with the masturbating topic. It's like, it really just depends on the individual and what feels like. It's like we all know when we're getting into a bit of a slippery slope. Like if you notice yourself going to your vibrator every time you want a self-pleasure, or if you're having sex and you notice yourself grabbing your vibrator to like help yourself get there, and that starts to become like, that like kind of raises a flag for you, that's probably when you should address it with yourself. And I just don't think that, like, okay, I'm here for everyone using whatever toys they want, especially when it comes to like, you know, awakening your sexuality and connecting with your pleasure. I think it's really important to like support yourself in whatever way that might be, whether that's having like a huge range of toys and like experimenting with things and trying new things and having fun, or like connecting to your body without any other stimulation, like just using your hands. But then it's vibrators obviously is, you know, it's highly stimulating for the nerves in the clitoris, but I think the general consensus in like most studies is that it's definitely not enough to damage the nerves permanently. it can sort of like, it doesn't desensitize them, but it can sort of like, I guess, numb them for a little while, like after you, maybe like if you're using a vibrator for a really long time and then all of a sudden you know, like you orgasm and then you keep going, like it might take yourself a little bit longer to get there each time because the nerves are just like, whoa, what is going on? This is crazy. Yeah. Like this is, you know, external stimulation from a tool that's like battery powered. Like it's definitely not a hand that's like, you know, doing what it can. And yeah, so it doesn't, I wouldn't say that it like decreases the nerves permanently, but it can sort of create this like delayed effect where it will take a little while for those nerves to build up sensitivity again. But then there is like the topic of the psychological dependence, which is kind of, you know, what I was talking about before with like if you reach for your vibrator every time because you're like, oh, I can't get there without one, then I think there's so many factors to consider around that. Like if you started masturbating at a certain age without a vibrator and then you found a vibrator and that's, you know, what started you on this journey, like can you go back and not use a vibrator and still pleasure yourself and still experience pleasure? And when you're with a partner or when, you know, you're in like an intimate situation with a lover, can you still experience pleasure without a vibrator? And I think that's when it's like also the moment where you as an individual have to check in with yourself and be like, oh, okay, what types of pleasure do I want to experience? Like, obviously you can get yourself off with your Satisfyer Pro or whatever after like 2 minutes, you know? So yeah, like it's just a matter of like
it's just what a matter do I of want?
Like what kind of experience do you want? Like do you want a long lasting, kind of slow, patient, almost like tantalizing experience with yourself or with a lover? Or do you want that like instant gratification? Yeah. And so that's why I'm just not here to shame any use of any toy, because, you know, especially in like, there's so many different areas where vibrators and sex toys are actually either therapeutic or like, you know, they introduce people to their pleasure. They can introduce someone to an orgasm, which is like a pretty profound, I think that's fucking amazing. So I think it's just like, you have to be really careful with the idea that like, vibrators are bad and like not using toys is the right way to be having sex, because whatever gets people into that pleasure state is what I'm here for. So I kind of support those ideas, but I'm also just here to like remind people to connect themselves and I guess just like tap into what feels right and whether you might want to like, you know, play with different things, switch it up a little, take time off. It can also be like a game, you know, like try new things. Don't always go for your vibrator. Do things that like give you pleasure that aren't stimulating your clit or that isn't like, you know, going to get you there in a few minutes. Like actually take your time and get to know your body and your erogenous zones. And I don't know. I just think it's like it's such a vast world and there's so much in there. So it's like having an orgasm with a vibrator is amazing, and you can, it's like, I don't know, eating like one bag in like one chocolate in the bag, whereas you could dive into the bag and like, you know, rummage around and find all the different chocolates and like try them all and see which one you like best.
Oh, I love that metaphor.
Yeah. I was thinking of it too. It's like not labeling food as bad food or good food. Like you can have like nice experiences with it, but it's all in moderation and always listen to your body, what makes you feel good in that situation. And if you have already that feeling of like, oh, maybe I'm doing it too much or it just doesn't feel natural, then you should already question, okay, maybe I should just try to not use it for a while. And if you can't like not use it, then there's obviously like a thing where it's something like, okay, going why? On. Yeah, you should question yourself. But I think in general,
I find it so funny as well how like, you know, once upon a time to masturbate was considered taboo and like dirty and shameful. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you can masturbate, but it has to be with like a crystal pleasure wand or it has to be with your hands. Like you can't use a vibrator. You can't use like a battery operated toy. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, but we've just made something that was like really empowered shameful again.
Yes.
Like
yes.
If you reach for your vibrator, are you experiencing shame then? Because you're like, oh no, I'm not doing it right. Like, yeah. Just do whatever the fuck makes you happy and like remove the shame from your sexual experience. And if that means like, you know, unpacking the fact that you have this conflicted relationship with your sex toys, then like maybe that's something you want to unpack. It's just so different for everyone. It's so subjective.
But yeah. I also love what you said, kind of just thinking about what experience you want to have and kind of choosing that in the moment, like whether you want like a quick kind of gratification, like you said, or if you want this really deep kind of sensual and intimate experience with yourself or with someone else. Mm. I think that's maybe something that you could just think about before and then you can decide. And there's no shame if you decide for that or
both
any other.
Totally.
Both.
Okay. Yeah. And vibrators can be sacred. Like having a moment with your vibrator can be really sensual. You can also like, you know, if you're with a partner, you can like give each other massages and then like build your way up and bring it back down and then build up again and bring it back down. And then, you know, maybe right at the end you reach for a vibrator, or maybe you use it on different parts of the body to like stimulate different erogenous zones. Like, yeah, I think you just want to get creative. That's more kind of my advice that I would give
have
to people.
Have fun with it, I guess, as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I swear like all of my girlfriends have the... What is it? The Satisfyer. And I'm just like hearing all about it. I'm just like really tempted to get one as well.
Oh, you don't
like,
have one?
No.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay.
Well, yeah. And I was totally not like a product placement moment. It just like came to
sponsor us, please.
Hello, sponsor me.
No, but I actually also wanted to, because you said Crystal Wand. There's this like, actually she's from Byron as well. And I think I think she's a sex therapist and she makes those like crystal wands. And I like follow her on Instagram and I always like read the reviews and they're just like, oh my God, I just had the best orgasm of my life. And da da da. They're super expensive though, but one day I'll get there and get one. Cause I think
what's the difference though? Just because it's a crystal and like,
I don't know. It's like, it's apparently magic.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really interesting.
I mean, it would also look nice around your house, you know, you're just like, oh yeah,
it's like so crystal. There's like three types of crystals. I think there's a rose quartz, then you have obsidian, the black crystal, and then also white one. And each of them kind of have different, like, they make you have different experiences. Like the rose quartz is sort of more like for self-love, and then I don't know about the other ones because I had my eyes on the rose quartz, so I know a bit about it. But one day
sounds like you need to build your sex toy collection, Carol.
I do actually, like all my friends have like a
well
few
it's Christmas
them.
Soon yeah
Christmas yeah soon. Ask Santa.
Just kind of
like just ask your mom, be like, no, this is not a sex toy, this is actually just like a crystal for my house, like
to give me good energy. Yeah. No, but I also wanted to really try one day, because I've seen it in a lot of movies now, is the kind of the, I don't know how they're called, but the little yoni eggs, the little like balls that you put in and like kind of make Kegel exercise and stuff. I think that's really interesting as well to experience.
Yeah, I guess
that.
You can try everything and see, just see what you like, I guess.
Yes.
It's that's
time.
Definitely – that one's something that I would be really just like mindful when learning how to use it correctly and safely for your body, and like what – you know, everybody actually has a very different like – makeup
reaction.
In our pelvic floor, and we don't all need to tighten our pelvic floors and do Kegel exercises. I think that's like a real huge misconception. Like, there's actually a lot of people walking around with hypertensive pelvic floors and without knowing it, and then they're doing all these Kegel exercises and they're in Pilates and they're like sucking up their pelvic floor, and it's like actually equally as important to have a relaxed pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. So that's also like a huge, you know, element to do with sexual function and orgasm and
because there's always like there's always a lot of how do you say, emphasis on like, do your Kegel exercises, strengthen your pelvic floor and stuff, and there's just so much like kind of pressure on it, and then like you kind of don't really see the other side of also being able to relax it and kind of just not always sucking it up, like you said, and just kind of tensing it up.
Well, I guess it kind of goes hand in hand with like the one question that's a bit like further down, but like the one that's like about, do you have any tips on like how I can like what things can affect my libido, and also how do I get my sex drive back, or like things that make you like come more, like any practices that you think worked well or work well?
Yeah, I think just like full disclaimer, these questions, like sometimes I feel like we need to approach these particular questions from like the opposite end of the spectrum and like actually come at them almost like backwards and ask yourself why your libido might be low or why your sex drive is low and why, what was the other question about?
How
can I come or orgasm? Like to actually just look at what your body is trying to tell you basically. And, you know, it's the same with the Kegels. There's this whole movement and conversation around how to like peak your libido and spike your libido. And I got a little bit overwhelmed and fatigued at seeing all of that, especially on social media, like a lot of infographics on like 10 supplements to boost your libido or here's like, you know, a diet or a cacao or like whatever. And I feel like there's a lot of emphasis on how to raise your libido and your sex drive and how to have better orgasms. And there's less emphasis on, you know, like what is actually going on under the surface. And so when I, you know, when clients come to me and they talk to me about those particular issues, a lot of the time we end up discussing their relationships and, you know, things like we were talking about at the beginning, like, are you feeling seen? Are you feeling heard? Are you communicating properly with your partner? Are you stressed? Are you like exhausted? Like really? I think it's like crazy statistics. I can't exactly remember the number, but the amount of our sex hormones that's produced in our adrenal glands is actually like mind-blowing when you realize the exact, you know, majority. And I think that that's something that we also don't get taught, and we also underestimate like how much our stress levels actually affect our libido, because, you know, our adrenal glands also play a massive role in producing our stress hormones and our sex hormones. So if you're running on empty and you might even be dealing with like adrenal fatigue or something like that, then your sex hormones kind of go on the back burner. Like when your body's in fight or flight, it's focusing on, you know, the major functions of the body. So like pumping those limbs with blood so you can run from predators, and like, you know, the heart rate and the breathing quickens and all of that. But it's not focusing on things like reproduction or sex or digestion. So I think probably one of the most important things when, if you are looking at your body and being like, okay, you know, this is actually just my body being really helpful and communicating to me that something's not quite right. If you've kind of ticked off all the other things and been like, well, what's going on in my relationship? Am I feeling heard? Am I expressing my needs? Am I communicating with my partner or with my lovers or with myself? My cycle, what's going on with my cycle? Intuitively, is there anything like bubbling that I haven't been, that I've been neglecting, or even just like my joy? Like, am I feeling fulfilled? Am I feeling playful? Am I in touch with myself right now? My self-worth, my confidence, my relationship to my body, all of those things is like such a massive, like, kind of soup, and it's all like swimming around in there. And then you have to look at your health and your well-being. And what's actually, what that's telling you is that something might not be quite right in your actual system. And a big thing that we forget to do is like completing the stress cycle in our body. So if you're looking at your sex drive and your libido and you're trying to raise those levels, or even just like your, because really like sexual energy is life force energy. So if you're looking at trying to raise your life force energy in your body, then you can't be doing that from a place of depletion and from stress and exhaustion.
And I think also kind of, I see that with myself. You stress yourself out as well with the question, like, why is it not, like, why don't I have any sex drive? Like, what is happening? Yeah. Like, what's happening with my body? Like, and I think I tend to always compare myself to other people, for example, like, oh my God, why is everyone around me so horny and I'm not? And then you pressure yourself.
You're like, is something wrong with me? Something wrong with my partner? Like, it's actually so good that you said that, because I've realized that, like, when I'm more relaxed or I have less on my mind, like, say I'm on a vacation, my sex drive is way higher because I just can focus more on it. Whereas when I'm, like, working a lot and, like, I feel like I'm a bit, like, stressed at the moment and, like, I don't know, I definitely realize that I just also just don't think about it. I have, like, so many other things going on, and it's like, feel like I don't have the time to even have these emotions or, like, feelings and then let them come into my body. And then sometimes I feel bad because my partner might want to have, like, sex. And then
And then you're like, fuck, I need to have sex, like, to kind of also satisfy him.
Yeah, but then it's like, you don't have to satisfy him, but you also just don't want to be, like, completely, like, because then they might think they did something wrong, but it's actually just, like, internal and, like, like you said, communicating that, like, hey, I just have a lot on my mind right now. I think it's also, like, for me personally, when I want to have sex, I want to be, like, don't want to have all these thoughts in my brain, because then I'm, like, not really present. I'm not really there. I'm just, like, thinking about my next to-do list, and that's probably
better.
It's
so hard to let go as well.
Yeah.
It's, like, for me, sometimes sex is, a big mind thing. And then you're just like, whilst having sex, and then you think about something else, like what you have to do. And then you're like, shit, I can't have those thoughts. Yeah. Like, I need to focus on sex. And it's like all this, like, the cycle in your head. And it just makes everything so hard.
It's like
so
meditation. You're like trying to want, you're like, no, go back to depression.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I think, like, a big, honestly, like, a lot of the questions that we've talked about so far, and some of the ones that, I feel like we're going to go towards, they all really come back to that same underlying theme of connecting to yourself. And a really big part of it is, like, is presence and is embodiment. And embodiment is sort of like this buzzword that everyone's throwing around right now, but really, like, you're engaging in an act where, you know, if you're having penetrative sex, then you're literally engaging with somebody else's body or with a toy that's, like, going inside you, and that's an energetic exchange. And if you're not present in that moment and you're leaving your body for whatever reason, even if it's just that you're, like, distracted or you're, you know, criticizing yourself or you're thinking of other things or your to-do list or something, then how are you going to experience pleasure and sensation? Like, you have to really inhabit your body to feel those things. And a lot of the work that I do with people is, like, and with myself on my own journey, is coming back to my body and coming back to the body, because that is, you know, it's our vessel. It's where we experience sensation. And a lot of the time people talk about, like, oh, my libido is really low, or I'm not orgasming or whatever. And it's like, well, are you connected? Like, do you feel connected? Do you want to be having sex? That's another thing, is, like, when you talk about libido, it's like, okay, well, do you actually, like, yeah, do you want to be having sex? Like, just really check with yourself and listen to yourself. And it's like, sometimes I'll go through phases where I'll be like, you know, right now I actually, for whatever reason, I don't want to have sex. I don't want to be touched. And I'll just, like, communicate that to my partner and be like, hey, this is what I'm going through right now. This is, like, a moment. Maybe I'm doing some work on something. Maybe I've been, like, healing a particular aspect of, like, my own journey, and I have to just honor that. And I think, especially as women, and, you know, this, anyone who's experienced any kind of, like, gender-based oppression, is we're usually in positions where we're the givers, and we've given a lot, and we've also sacrificed a lot, and we've also compromised a lot. And more I'm having conversations with people who definitely can identify times in their life where they've had sex because their partner wanted to, or because they, you know, wanted to satisfy they wanted to kind of fulfill that element of their relationship. And it might not be you know, necessarily non-consensual, but it still has that tone to it where I'm tired or I'm actually not in the mood or I'm feeling sad or emotional or stressed or like, you know. So I think that's also a big part of it is actually checking in with yourself and being like, do I actually want to have sex right now? Like, especially when your libido is low, that's like the first thought you should really be having is maybe I don't want to be having sex, or maybe I don't want to be having the type of sex that I'm having. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different ways that we can experience pleasure and intimacy and connection. And like what you said, Carol, about comparing yourself to others, especially now that we've kind of, you know, we've come out of this wave of like sexual oppression and now we're in the sexual awakening and the empowerment stage, but everybody has to be having heaps of sex all the fucking time now because that's what sexual empowerment is.
Yeah, that's always on my mind. I'm just like, there's this like time now where everyone's talking about it and being more open about it, and everyone's kind of exchanging experiences and how they have sex and what they do and how they're like, what their sex drive is like, and then you're just like, shit, like I'm not like that sometimes.
Exactly. Especially in Berlin, there's like everyone has kings, everyone has sex in the clubs,
and you're like it's super like overwhelming as well for me sometimes. But
like massive emphasis on the sarcasm, because I feel like it's probably one of the biggest reasons why people get so caught up in, you know, whether their sex drive is low, because they might hear a friend flippantly say like, oh, we haven't had sex for 2 weeks, or like, I only had sex with my partner once this week. And it's like, well, for some people that might be a lot, and for some people that might be completely normal, and for others, yeah, that, you know, does indicate that their sex drive is low. And I think that that's a big, comparison is such a big issue.
And like, that brings me to the next question. Like, what would you say, how should we deal with like sexual imbalances in a relationship? Because sometimes, like you said, we want to kind of satisfy our partner and we want to make him happy and kind of satisfied. Like, how would you deal with this? If, for example, your partner is super horny all the time, but yourself, you're just like,
I don't have time. I'm stressed. Yeah. I don't want to, like, different reasons.
I think, firstly, communication is like the number one element. And I think especially in long-term relationships, you're going to go through chapters and you're going to go through phases. And that's something that you both need to be at peace with, especially, you know, I bleed, I have a monthly cycle, and my partner knows that there are certain times in my cycle where I just do not want to be touched.
Yeah, like don't do not touch me.
To be approached. I don't even want to be like addressed. Like, don't even refer to me. And, you know, we've kind of had to like navigate that over like the past year of being aware of that and also letting that be honored. And I think that that's really important to communicate your needs, your desires, your own like unique body, because whoever they've been with in the past is going to be completely different to you. And, you know, we're all going to need completely different things. And that's something that, like, I think there's also a really massive emphasis, especially in hetero relationships, on penetration and on like the act and completion of sex. Especially for like, you know, a lot of our sweet hetero cis males that we love, but also I feel like there's a lot of emphasis on that. And I think we need to sort of unpack it and be like, well, how many ways can we give each other pleasure and how many ways can we receive pleasure? And I was talking to a friend about this recently who was having this exact issue, and we were saying, you know, why don't you just offer to massage my whole entire body with like sensual oils? And then like that maybe will arouse me and I'll feel like having sex, and maybe it won't. And that's also okay, but you've still given me pleasure and you've still connected with me intimately. And I think when it comes down to like intimate relationships, especially in that like hetero dynamic of, you know, where penetrative sex is sort of like held above all. Mm-hmm. There really needs to be a conversation around like the different types of intimacy that you both can enjoy. And like, you know, maybe you could be really practical and be like, hey, when I get home from work and I'm really tired, I'm probably not going to feel like having sex straight away. But there are definitely, there's going to be moments where I need you to honor that and I need mm-hmm. you not to ask me and I need you to just like go deal with yourself or connect with me in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also going to be moments where I might warm up to it if you like are gentle with me and you mm-hmm. actually, you know, mm-hmm. help me to relax into my body and build up into that like aroused erotic state. And I think that's another thing is that you can't just go from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
But that's like a whole nother story, which is like a massive, yeah, it's like, I'll get on a soapbox.
Yeah. No, but I think it's, like you said, there's always so much emphasis on like the, like when you talk about sex, that sex is only penetration and like, mm. but sex can also be other things like massaging each other or doing like other things, like I said. So there's always mm. this big misconception that you only had sex when there was a yeah. penis and a vagina, like when there exactly. was only penetration, but that's actually
yeah, I think
true.
It's also about intimacy. And I think what you said with the cycle also makes a lot of sense because we had like an episode about cycle syncing. And I really like, since I got my period back, I lost it for a while. I really realized how that plays such a big role. And I think it's really good if you have a partner or a sexual partner to let them know like what are your cycles. Like obviously also listening to your body can always be different, but I definitely feel it with myself. Mm-hmm. There are moments where I'm like not horny at all. And the next second
or, like,
I'm
like ovulation, mm-hmm. you're like
horny. And then your yes. partner might be just like, what is going on with you? And it's just like good that you just communicate your needs and also like mm. let them communicate their needs. And like you said, just talk about mm. what do you like, what you're interested in. Like sometimes it doesn't have to be penetration, but like massaging or other kinds of intimacies, whatever mm. feels right for you. And yeah, I think, yeah, it's a great.
Yeah. And also just like touch and play. Like I think a big part of, a big sort of like thing that we forget as humans, which is like literally so basic, is just to connect with each other and be sensual with each other. Like throughout the day, there are so many opportunities to like connect with your partner sensually that are that's maybe gonna like even create a bit of foreplay like throughout mm-hmm. the day. You could literally start at like in the morning when you're getting ready for work or texting each other throughout the day. And then like when you get home or when you see each other next, like you might actually feel more spicy and like excited to have sex because you have kind of built that excitement mm. throughout the day. And I think that's something that we also forget is that you can't just go from, you know, one thing to the next and all of a sudden sex is on the table.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah. Another real massive just issue is the orgasm, like the big O. It's oh. so, there's so much pressure around it. And I think mm. we really need to like remove that from the table and just get rid of goal-oriented sex in general. Like if I could just eliminate that from nice. Our brains, I would, because the amount of like pleasure and joy and fun and play that is actually accessible to us that we miss out on because we're too
focused
like,
on having an
fixated
orgasm.
On this but, orgasm.
Yeah, yeah. I,
go,
I
Carol, can go off. I can tell.
Okay, yes. Oh my god! No, I can tell that. Like, I can say that about myself so much because the amount of times that I couldn't be fully present whilst having sex is because my mind was like, oh, like I want to come, obviously, but I can't come. Like, why can't I come? I need to come. Blah blah blah. And then also, the pressure is like when the guy says, oh, I'm almost coming. And then it's like, yeah. No, I'm far away from
you're
that
like,
right
I'm,
now.
Let me get my script. I'm going to just
no, like I had this yeah. one time. It was like, I think my like second sexual experience I had. And it was like, obviously I didn't know the person too well, but I remember that. And I also wasn't experienced at all. And I was like, what should I do? Like, what am I doing right now? And it's like so like weird in the beginning. Still sometimes is when you like sleep with someone that you don't know that well. But yeah, and I remember that like the guy came and then like we laid next to each other like after and he asked me, he was like, oh my God, I just like came so hard. Like you as well. And I was like, like I don't know really what I said. It was just so
like, do you lie or do you say the truth? Like, oh,
yeah. So yeah, like honestly, the amount of times that I couldn't fully enjoy it because my mind was just so focused on the big, and it's that's like such a shame.
I think sex can be great, like also without having an orgasm. Like obviously orgasms are great, but like I had a lot of sex that I felt like it was good, even though it didn't come. But it was just like I still was like horny. I was still enjoying it. So I think like taking that pressure off you and the guy as well to just be like, yes, I want to come. Like if I'm not come at all, is that's like in my our whole relationship or in our sexual relationship. Maybe that's also a thing. But I think just taking away like every time we have sex, we both have to always come.
Yeah. Exactly. You know,
that pressure, I think. Yeah.
Especially with a long-term partner, like you can have that conversation with them and be like, hey, I'm probably not always going to come and that's completely fine, but you need to know that I'm okay with that because I think, you know, people assume that if you haven't orgasmed that you didn't enjoy the sex and it's like, no, the sex was really amazing, but I just didn't come and that's completely fine. And I think it's important to also, especially when you're having sex with men, to just talk about slow, like not necessarily slow sex, but like lengthy sex. Like they don't, there's no pressure on the man
just like
to not orgasm. Like do whatever, you know, I just don't feel like people should, unless you're like practicing semen retention, like I don't feel like you should like restrain yourself, but I just feel like if you're actually willing to just take your time and be really patient, especially if you're having sex with someone who takes a little bit longer, or you know, everybody has a different level that they're going to get to, and also like the female arousal sort of system is very different to the male arousal system, and absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of the time with the experience of an orgasm for a woman, it can be, you know, a peak and then a plateau and then an orgasm. So like you might start feeling those feelings of like, oh my God, it's about to happen. And then all of a sudden you're like
not anymore.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yes, but it's true. Like in that moment, you have to just trust and be patient and keep going and be like, oh, okay, it's building. And so like, if you can educate your partner around that and yourself and also have like the confidence and also the worth to be like, I deserve to take up space and time. Like my pleasure is a priority here. And we're both committed to like, you know, giving me the space to experience pleasure. Not that orgasm is the goal, but if I get there, that's great. That's you know, great. Like that's a bonus.
That's such a good way of like thinking about it. Like if it happens, it's good, like it's awesome. But if it doesn't, it's also, it doesn't make the sex bad or boring or anything.
But I feel like, like you said, taking your time. Cause I feel like a lot of times we want to like skip foreplay or like just don't have it. Like for example, for me, foreplay is super important. Same. I think it's different for everyone. But I think just communicating what your needs are and like what you're interested in. And then also like not rushing, like, if you're super stressed, maybe you shouldn't have sex anyways. It's not just like a quickie, like in the bathroom.
Just to kind of put it behind you. Like,
Like I think it's also nice if you can. Yeah.
Sorry, I just cut you off.
No. All good. No, you go on. I was like.
I just quickly want to jump on what you said about foreplay, because skipping the foreplay is like, for me, even just kind of, the concept of like foreplay and sex have kind of merged into the same thing. Like I don't see them as different anymore. And I feel like when you talk about like skipping the foreplay, it's like, why can't we make the foreplay the sex? And that's something that is probably a huge piece in this as well, is especially for vulva owners and like for women, you really have to be relaxed and aroused in order to orgasm. And you have to, you know, feel safe in your body. A lot of the time you have to feel safe and comfortable, because orgasms are also pretty wild. Like that's another thing. Like, are you comfortable being witnessed in your full expression of your sexuality? Are you comfortable witnessing yourself in that full expression? So if you can like create a little bit of a, you know, if you can bridge the gap between foreplay and sex and like remove that gap and make them the same thing, then that's already, you know, stepping into the world of actually experiencing so much pleasure, because it's starting to unpack that sexual script that like there's sex and there's penetration and there's orgasm and that's the goal, and then there's everything else.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like it's so beautiful just to linger in the things outside of that sometimes, and like you know, you actually will reach incredible levels of pleasure and probably orgasm in the moments that you usually pass by, that you usually like, you know, skip to get to the main event.
It's such a great tip to just, but or just in general, like that you pointed that out, that like foreplay is sex basically. I think we tend to forget that, or like I never heard anyone say that before, and I think it's a really important point actually.
And also kind of to be able to orgasm, you have to feel comfortable like with your own, like in the moment, and feel safe and like also seen, and just like, yeah, it's like the worst when you feel uncomfortable and then you're having sex and then you just don't really, it kind of like, for me, you cramp up and it just gets really
strange. I
don't
think you can also, like, it's really hard for you to orgasm, because I feel like for me, orgasming?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It's like, it's very like a vulnerable state that you're in, because you're really like revealing yourself to someone, like you said. And I think it's like, for me, it's hard. When I don't feel comfortable with you, I don't think I can
come. Orgasm. Yeah. But would you say, like, do you, for anyone who wants to sort of reach that state, like, do you have any tips on how you can come better?
Or like sexual self-care as well, I guess.
Probably the first thing that comes to mind is like just romance yourself and explore your own body. Educate yourself, educate your partner, be assertive, like really, and not assertive in the sense where like you're aggressive or you're like bossing someone around, but just don't be afraid to like use your words during sex with a partner. It can even be, you know, sexy. You can make it dirty talk, like tell them what you want and when to keep going, when to go faster, when to move around, when to stop. Like all of those things are really going to empower you and help you to, I guess, reach, you know, climax, but also, yeah, connect deeper to your sexual self and to your, like, to your pleasure capacity. I think, yeah, it's kind of that thing of like making sex the goal. I could go through like a list of tools to like, you know, techniques to get you there. But there's like websites for that, like go on, it's called Beducated or something.
Beducated?
That sounds cool.
I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, there's like so many amazing educational platforms like Oh My God Yes and Beducated that do like literally do like video tutorials on how to like squirt and how to like have like G-spot orgasms. So definitely look that up. But yeah, I think a lot of my
we're gonna link it below for anyone.
Yeah, definitely. You can watch them with your partner as well, if they're down. But yeah, a lot of the work that I do with clients is just around connecting to yourself and connecting to your own pleasure. And I think, you know, this is like the age old statement, but how can you expect someone to pleasure you if you can't pleasure yourself? And yeah, I think figuring out what you want and what you like and what feels good in your body, and definitely like, yeah, talking to your partner and communicating to them. If you're in a relationship, like sometimes it's a little bit confronting to do it in the bedroom, like in the moment, if it's like before sex or during sex or even after sex, like that can be a little bit too real and exposing. So outside the bedroom, like if you're driving or just, I don't know, cooking or hanging out once, just like bring something up or just talk about what you might want to try, or that you heard of people doing this, or that you've been, you know, contemplating maybe something that happened in your last sexual experience that felt really good or that didn't feel good. And
and tell them what you liked, tell them what you didn't like. I think really stepping into your sensual self and your erotic self and actually connecting with those aspects of yourself in your everyday life. Mm. Like something that this is just like a weird kind of like specific thing that I love to encourage people to do, which is like, you know, to connect to your erotic self, like do something a little bit sexy and like secret, like wear like erotic lingerie under your work clothes and just like, you know, like romance yourself in a way that's like a little bit secret and exciting and nobody else knows about it. Or maybe like you could take beautiful, sexy photos of yourself, and it doesn't have to be for anyone, just to like kind of awaken that part of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think if your goal is orgasm and your goal is like heightened pleasure, to really connect deeply to your body and your like sensory awareness, and also experiment with like different sensations in the body, different types of pleasure, different types of orgasm, all the different types of sex that you can be having. Like rewrite your sexual script, actually like write it down and be like, you know, what was my first sexual experience like? What was my first concept of sex? You know, and maybe that could be like a vulnerable, and for some people it can be really painful to go through that process, because, you know, we've all internalized different messages, we've all been through different experiences, but just really choosing how you want to be having sex and how you want to be I guess framing your sexual experiences and the lens that you want to look through.
A really interesting show that I started to watch a few months ago was the one with Gwyneth Paltrow. Oh my God, her name is so hard.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Paltrow.
I think it's called Goop or something.
Oh, isn't that her brand?
No, Goop and something.
I think that's her brand.
And it's like basically like a mini series, and it's like different couples who like work with different sex therapists, and like they do different kind of like therapy sessions. And there was one sex therapist, and she kind of developed this sexual blueprint thing. And there's like, I think 5 different sexual blueprints, and everyone's kind of like different. So that I think there was like kinky, sensual, physical. Or so I don't really remember it that well, but it was super interesting to hear all about it, and like how you can also activate different parts and like with different kind of like your senses. Like you don't always have to penetrate or like kiss, or like there's also the energetic blueprint, like energy and how you can orgasm like from your energetic kind of field. And it was super interesting, so I can definitely recommend that show.
Yeah, cool. I think also what you said with the lingerie is like a big, I guess it's also like goes back to what you like what turns you on. And I think personally, like I personally love like feeling sexy about my body, or like wearing lingerie. And I think it's a big part as well for like you said, feeling the pleasure for yourself and self-love and feeling good in your body. So if lingerie makes you feel sexy and makes you feel good, or even taking photos for yourself makes you feel sexy, then it's already great. And I think that's a big part that goes hand in hand with sex, is that you yourself feel good and sexy and ready to have sex,
basically. That's so important. Yeah, when I don't feel sexy and like for example, sometimes when you haven't shaved your legs and you're not like wearing that like not too nice underwear, like it really affects my sexual drive, I would say.
I don't care about the shaving that much, but like more like how I feel.
How I feel.
When you have like your period, like, for example, you feel like maybe not as well, like, or like I don't know,
not that comfortable.
Different stages that you're in.
Everybody feels sexually empowered in such different ways. Like you could be like, dressed in a certain way that feels empowering for you, and someone else, it might actually not feel empowering for them. And it's the same with like shaving. Like some people feel super sexually empowered when they're like hairy and they've got this big bush and they've got like hairy armpits and they're just like, you know, feeling wild and whatever. And then other people want to shave their legs and feel really sensual and like soft.
Oh yeah, I'm that person. It's like, just like,
Yeah, it depends on my mood, I guess. Just like sometimes I'm also just too lazy, to be honest.
But in the winter time.
Yeah, especially in winter, I'm like, oh, I can't be fucked, to be honest. But yeah, I think, I mean, we like already talked about like most of the questions because it just kind of goes all hand in hand, and like, you really gave like such eye-opening and great answers, and it like makes me feel like I can go out of this. And like, I really feel like going like to my partner now and be like, hey, like I talked about
this. I've learned something
this.
Today.
Yeah. And I think it also, I hope everyone that's listening is motivated to do that too, or like just for themselves, like what can I implement in my life, or like also just analyzing like their sexual behaviors. Cause I think it's such an important and big part of our lives that like, we just don't talk about it. And I think it's really important to talk about it with your friends, with your partner or yourself. And yeah, it's great that you came on here to share that knowledge with us.
Yeah, it's been so, like, I just get so fucking excited talking about it. And I think, like, just the journey that I've been on and, you know, talking to you both, like, a few years younger than me, and I can really resonate with where you are in your journey and where some of your maybe listeners are as well. And I can, like, remember, I can pinpoint a moment in my life when I was, like, I don't know, like, 23 or 22, and I started to do these, like, it sounds like kind of witchy, but I started these like sex rituals with myself. Well, it was more so like a pleasure ritual, and it kind of just became this like practice that I started doing where I just connected to myself, and sometimes it was completely non-sexual. And I've always been like the queen of self-care. Like, any of my friends will always say that, and I feel like it comes hand in hand with self-care, and it's that same thing of like really nourishing yourself and filling up your cup. And, you know, especially if you're in a sexual intimate relationship, like, you can't expect yourself to give from an empty space. So if your own cup is filled and your own like pleasure and sexual, sensual self is feeling alive and awake, then you'll actually just move through the world with so much to give and so much like joy, and like, you know, your heart space will just be so open and alive. And yeah, I feel like that really changed. It changed my whole experience of being in my body, and also my like sex life and my relationship to myself and to partners, and what I kind of, yeah, like the direction that I went with my life was very different from that point. It was a sexual awakening.
Yeah, I think it's great to see, like, to talk to different age groups about it as well, and see how their experiences are, like younger people, older people. I mean, I guess everyone's different, but also it's just nice to talk to someone as well who's like just so passionate and excited to share what you learn throughout the years, I guess.
And like, you, when someone's like confident and comfortable in their own body and with their own sexuality, I think that makes everything so much more comfortable.
For coming on, and we hope that whoever listens to this kind of can get as much insight as they need and want, and get all the nice information to get your own sexual awakening, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, but
Yes, thank you so much again. And yes,
hopefully see you soon in the future, whether it's on the chat or maybe in Australia. Who knows? Or if you ever come to Berlin, you know.
Yeah, I'll hit you up.
Anyways, yes, guys, we hope that you're well, stay well, and we will see you in our next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.